Okay, big room, lots of people, so I'm a bit nervous here. This is my first talk as an order member. And in a way, I feel sort of not quite qualified to talk about the spiral path because the last 7 days I've been going round and round, six rounds, quite a lot. I turned it on. Okay, so I'll be reading this out mostly because I do want to get through it and then get on to the celebration. So I'll just quickly recap what we've done the last 4 or 5 weeks. So we focus on the fact that our very existence is conditioned and co-produced by ongoing external and internal conditions or events throughout our life or numerous lifetimes if you choose, and that because we are mostly unconscious or unaware of the three poisons, which are greed, hatred and delusion, we continually and automatically react in unskillful ways. And as you know, unskillful thoughts, speech and actions not only cause suffering in our lives, it also is habit forming and perpetuates ongoing unskillful patterns of behaviour. So it goes round and round, a never-ending, reactive, non-creative, automatic, cyclic way of doing life. Sounds rather exhausting, isn't it? This going round and round, either repulsed by pain, grasping for pleasure, or worst, being in a numbed-out state, reminds me of what Einstein apparently said, a cycle of doing the same thing over and over, expecting a different result. Well, if you have been along, then you will know that I will be talking about the point of freedom or the spiral path towards enlightenment. There's some photocopies there that you can refer to. The spiral path towards enlightenment is actually an important part of our movement, the Triratna approach, because our teacher Sangharashtra has emphasised that the spiral path shows the path as a positive process of growth rather than a negative process of suppressing unskillful mind states, which he thought can be a less than positive impression given by the Pali Canon. The spiral path was first elucidated by one of the Buddha's disciples, an Arahant called Dhammadina, who was really a bright cookie. Women, even in the Buddha's day, were subjected to some gender biases. So when Dhammadina, being a woman, first communicated this progressive path, some of the Buddha's disciples went to him to query whether this was the truth or not. And rather than rebuffing her, the Buddha gave this progressive path towards the enlightenment a stamp of approval. I personally feel that this progressive path has been really helpful for myself in terms of practicing the Dharma. I remember feeling really excited and inspired and even hopeful when I first learnt about the spiral path, because up until then, my limited understanding of Buddhism was really about not doing bad things in order to avoid negative consequences. Having a refugee background, there was a lot of suffering that I was very keen to eliminate and leave behind. So when I was shown the spiral path, I could visually see that I was heading somewhere rather than just going round and round. At one stage, when I was integrating a lot of traumatic past and going through a lot of doubts, it helped to be reminded that the next stage on the path was joy. I remember taking a nice deep breath and saying out loud, "That's what I want. I'm heading towards joy." I know this can sound a little like escapism, but it isn't. It's not about trying to escape the suffering of the world or forever grasping for pleasure. That would only just keep us going round and round. But it is about responding creatively and skillfully in order to free ourselves from the cyclic path. As mentioned throughout the previous talks, the main concern of Buddhist practice is to break the endless cycle of action and reaction and to set this process of progressive conditionality in motion. Vajrajyoti spoke briefly in her talk a few weeks ago about finding the gap in the outer ring of the wheel of life, a point where we can move from cyclic to the spiral path. In many ways, each of us encounter this gap hundreds of times throughout the day, but we don't realise it as such because we're not aware of Vedana, that word, which means that the raw sensation or feelings that some stimuli can arouse in us. So what does it mean by noticing Vedana and choosing to respond creatively? I remember when I first encountered this question, I really didn't have a clue what was meant by it. So we're going to try an experiment now. Here's the same question. How are you feeling right this moment? Notice where you go to gather this information. Did you go to your mind to try to rationalize? Did you go to your memory to figure this out? Did you go to your mood and emotion to decipher? Or did you go to your body? Studies have shown that the mind is a powerful thing. It can rationalize and tell you a whole lot of things that may or may not be true. But it is the body and the raw experience that is most congruent or true to how you're doing in each moment. So our practice is to tune into the body and notice Vedana. Know what the feeling is like, whether you are experiencing a pleasant and unpleasant or a confused or numb feeling, in order to respond creatively. I know I've spent quite a bit of time on the gap, when in fact I'm supposed to be talking about a point of freedom and the spiral path. But how I see it is that although the spiral path is a progressive and cumulative path that builds on each of the 12 stages, being aware of the gap and responding creatively rather than reactively is the practice that leads us towards more and more freedom. So now an outline of what the spiral path may look like. The first stage begins with a deep sense of unsatisfactoriness in life. Many of us will know this experience, that things are never 100% right. Things just don't live up to our expectation, not for very long anyway. If we have children, we'll notice this tendency in them. They light up at the new toy, become fixated on having this toy. But of course, as each day rolls on, you notice they become less and less interested in this now old toy, and they start to fixate on something new in the toy shop. As a mother, it's painful to watch, both because I want my children to get this insight into human suffering at the age of 5, but also because this feeling of dissatisfaction, restlessness and directionlessness reminds me of my own unsatisfactoriness or suffering. Once we have become sufficiently aware of this, eventually we start becoming aware of the state of dissatisfactionness. Sometimes it takes a long time, and often repeated feelings of this is required to understand that conditioned existence just isn't going to cut it anymore. Before becoming a Buddhist, I would try to provide my children many activities in order to keep them happy. But they just want more and more activities. After a while, I got braver and I allowed them the experience of freedom, or rather, through boredom. So the more time they spent alone with their boredom, the more they came to naturally find contentment in just being quiet and less demanding for stimulation. So our dissatisfaction actually makes us go in search of something higher, something more satisfying with greater happiness. Can you recall a time when you're faced with this realization that you are dissatisfied and you begin seeking something new? I remember the first time I came here 19 years ago to learn meditation. I wasn't even aware that I was dissatisfied with life until I came into contact with the feeling of peace during one of my meditations. I experienced something different, and I knew it was different from the usual rounds of life, which led me to the next stage of the spiral path, which is faith. Faith in the Buddhist tradition is called Shraddha. It is translated as faith, but also that there is a believing in something which it isn't something that we believe in that can't be rationalized. It can be translated as confidence or devotion. Having faith for me is having confidence in the actual experience or knowledge that I can develop as a human being, reach my potential. Although I couldn't language it at the time because it was a strong emotional response, I became confident in my in the actual response to it. Faith may arise, but it can also subside. As you all know, we become very excited about the Dharma and we learn, go to classes, read lots of books, but eventually it seems such hard work. Can't take it easy, would rather just have a beer, some chips maybe, and watch TV. I've been there myself, not the beer bit. I'd get complacent thinking that I deserve a break and stop meditating. After all the other times I meditated ought to add up. So, you know, a week of sleeping in wouldn't do any harm, I thought. Interestingly, Sangharashtra is known to have said that in the spiritual life, if you stop practicing, you actually don't just stand still. You actually slip backwards, which I found to be true for myself. Each time I doubted myself or the Dharma, I do the cycle another round. It's so it goes until the suffering gets too much and I'm once again reminded that the Dharma offers the way out of the merry-go-round, except it's not so merry. It's almost as if we have to keep doing the rounds until we can no longer deny the futility of samsara. Third stage, joy. This is where I was aiming towards. So independence upon faith arises joy. This is the next step. I'd found what I was looking for. I could see that by meditating and being ethical, I was having a direct effect on my day-to-day living. And that was a really powerful feeling, to take responsibility for my own life. I remember driving around and noticing that other drivers were waving and smiling at me. I was really puzzled by this strange phenomenon until I realised that they were smiling at me because I had this permanent grin on my face. I remember noticing the gap much more and being able to choose my responses, especially with grumpy people, and being able to manifest more positive responses from them. Without realising it, I naturally started living a more ethical life, and because I have more or less a good conscience, I began to feel joyful. Apparently, joy is the hallmark of a true Buddhist. Buddhism attaches great importance to this stage of feeling happy and carefree and at peace with oneself, having a clear conscience, being able to go about one's life with ease. The next stage, stage four, is rapture. Independence upon joy arises rapture. This is the next stage. Rapture is the nearest we get in English to translating the Sanskrit priti. Priti is an intense, thrilling, ecstatic joy which is so powerful that you feel it in your body as well as in your mind. For example, when we're seeing something beautiful like a sunrise, or beautiful painting, or when we witness unconditional love or tenderness between people, or when a piece of music or poetry resonates deeply in our experience, we might become moved to tears, and our heart might feel warm and light-filled, and we might sing out loud or dance like we've never danced before. It is thought that rapture comes about as a result of the release of blocked energies or locked up energy in our body. During one's spiritual life, especially in meditation, these blocked energies get dissolved. Once uncovered depths within oneself, little complexes are resolved so that the energy locked up in them is released and surges up. It is felt throughout the nervous system that one experiences pretty. I used to feel as though my hands were massive and that they were somehow crossed in interesting ways while I was meditating, even though I knew that they were still resting quietly on my lap. Then, in dependence upon rapture, there arises calm or peace. The Sanskrit word is prasabdi, means calm, tranquility and serenity, and is the calming down of the physical side effects of rapture, so that you're left with a purely mental and emotional experience. To me, it feels a bit like, for those of you who love dancing, having completely enjoyed, expressed, and exhausted myself at a Five Rhythms dance class, and then just lying down in a state of calmness with nothing else to do. And then, stage six, in dependence upon calm, there arises bliss, or sukha. Here it means the feeling of intense happiness that wells up due to the complete unification of all our emotional energies. So that we're no longer ambivalent, we're not divided, and everything is flowing all together. We feel more purposeful, there is a direction in our life. And then, depending upon intense happiness, arises samadhi. This word has several meanings, but here it means concentration, not a forcing of a fixation of the mind on a single project, object, but it's a concentration which comes naturally when in a state of intense happiness and when all our energies are integrated and unified, we're concentrated in a really true deep sense of the word. As Sangharakshita says, a concentrated person is a happy person, and a happy person is a concentrated person. It's significant here, if you can see on the map, on the chart or the model there, that samadhi arises halfway up the path. It's only then that we can really begin to concentrate, because our emotional energies have been unified and we are now perhaps for the first time in our lives happy. And at this point, our whole life needs to be in preparation for meditation. However, because even though we are elevated in our meditation practice, because we are not, we have not seen, we haven't reached insight, we still can be pulled back into the mundane experience. So my experience of this has been in the recent 3 months ordination retreat, where for the first time in my life, I was 100% engaged in the spiritual practice. I was neither a mother or a wife or a daughter or a friend or a therapist. I was absolutely happy. I yearned for no one or for anything. It was a precious time when all my energy was in preparation for meditation. However, as I read earlier, even though I was on the spiral path, I was still subjected to the gravitational pull of the cyclic rounds of existence. And without the optimal conditions that are provided on retreat, I noticed myself being pulled into more reactive ways of being once I came back to life in New Zealand. So this next stage here is where we lift off. Stage 8, knowledge and vision of things as they really are. So independence on samadhi arises knowledge and vision as they really are. This is when the concentrated mind sees things as they really are. So it's not an idea or a concept, it's actually a direct experience. Because when the mind is full of thoughts, it isn't calm enough or harmonized enough, and it gets pulled this way and that, so that reality isn't seen. We don't have that breakthrough. And our teacher, Sangharakshita, has often said that once we've reached this stage, there is no falling back the attainment of enlightenment is now assured. One way of putting it is to say that knowledge and vision is insight into the three marks of existence. I don't know if we've done three marks of existence before, but very briefly, the three marks of a conditioned existence is that, one, we see that all conditioned things are impermanent and that they are unsatisfactory. Therefore, they can't give us permanent or absolute happiness. And three, that they are insubstantial or ultimately unreal. So when you get a direct experience of this insight and you realize this in the depth of your being, then you are assured enlightenment. So then the next stage is withdrawal. So dependent on knowledge and vision of things as they really are, there arises, I'm not sure the word, nirvana. This stage represents the clean, serene withdrawal from involvement in conditioned things. Here, the image of the mirage and desert is often talked about. It's like we see something in a delusional way, we think that it's wonderful, but when we realise that actually it's not real, we withdraw our attention from that object. We no longer engage and waste energy in something that actually isn't real. And in my study note, it talks about sitting loose to life, that you still play the games that other people play, or some of them anyway, but you know that they are games. For example, a child takes his game very seriously because to him it is real. But the adult can join in while knowing that it's just a game. So if the child wins, the adult doesn't get upset, although in my family. So you may be doing what is necessary objectively in life, but subjectively you don't get caught up in any of it anymore. So then, independence upon withdrawal arises vairagya, which can be translated as dispassion. This stage differs from the previous one in that the other one is a movement of detachment from the conditioned existence, but at this stage you are actually in that actual state of detachment. So you can't be moved or stirred or touched by any worldly happenings. But it's not like it's a hardness or an insensitivity to what's going around you. There is still compassion. It's just that you don't become perturbed by what is happening anymore. You see it for what it is. Stage 11. Freedom, or on your thing, I think it says liberation. Independence upon dispassion, there arises spiritual freedom, vimukti. There are this is twofold, this concept of freedom. First, there is citto vimukti, or freedom of mind, which means complete freedom from all subjective, emotional or psychological biases, from all psychological conditioning. And the second is prajna vimukti, which means freedom of wisdom. And it is a freedom from all wrong views or ignorance or false philosophy or opinions. This complete freedom at the heart and mind is the highest possible level in the aim and object of Buddhist life and practice. But there is another final stage, knowledge of the destruction of the asura. It isn't enough to be free. This next stage is to know that one is free. And one knows that one is free when one realizes that the mental poisons have been destroyed completely. When these poisons are extinct, and when one knows that they are extinct, then the last craving, the emotional counterpart of spiritual ignorance, had also been destroyed. And then you gain Buddhahood, just like that. So, in conclusion, I was worried I'd run out of time. So the spiral path is a really progressive, to me, really positive model that helps me because of my own tendency. I tend to kind of go round and round in the suffering path, and it's really inspiring to know that, okay, there's that next step. However, I don't think that we need to worry too much about what the next step is, because from, as you all know, that you know, when you're practicing and you become ethical, then joy just arises. Yeah. So there is a faith and a trust in that if we practice, when we become completely practiced in the stage, should I say, then it just moves on to the next one. And this is something that is really helpful to hold a frame of, not just for myself, but in the work that I do, when I'm supporting clients, when I see people suffering, I actually inherently know this inside of myself because of my own experience, and it really allows the steadfast, I don't want to say goal, but I guess it is a goal towards Buddhahood and enlightenment.